Poirot and I were sitting on the terrace of a majestic hotel at St. Lou in Cornwall one fine summer morning when a spent bullet struck the wall close by. The intended victim, whose broad-brimmed hat the bullet had pierced with a neat little hole, was a girl called Nick Buckley, the owner of End House, which stood on a headland close to the hotel. On further investigation, it emerged that three other attempts had been made on her life in as many days.
We present John Moffat as Hercule Poirot and Simon Williams as Captain Hastings in Agatha Christie's Peril at End House.
You see, Hastings, where the path leads down the cliff to the sea, that is where the boulder so narrowly missed Mademoiselle Nick. She had a very fortunate escape.
Poirot, there is something I think I should tell you.
Then tell me.
At lunchtime in the hotel, while you were talking to Miss Buckley, I had a little chat with her friend, Mrs. Rice, or at least she did most of the talking.
And what did she talk about?
Nick Buckley. Mrs. Rice said she was the most amazing little liar and that she had invented the whole story of something going wrong with the brakes of her car. She said that her friend Mr. Lazarus told her there was nothing in it at all.
Ah, tiens, c'est intéressant ça. There is, of course, the type that tries to draw attention to itself by having marvellous escapes from deaths.
You don't think
that Mademoiselle Buckley is like that? No, I think not. You observe that we had great difficulty in convincing her of the danger in which she stands. But why should Mrs. Rice say that? What was her motive? Ah, it is interesting. The little facts that are curious, I like to see them appear. They point the way.
The way where?
You put your finger on the weak spot, my excellent Hastings. Where indeed? To hunt down a murderer after a crime has been committed, c'est tout simple. The murderer has, so to speak, signed his name by committing the crime. But here, there is no crime. And what is more, we do not want a crime.
But you must have some idea, some suspicion?
Nothing. On the face of it, no one seems to have any reason for desiring little Nick's death. The property, perhaps? End House passes to her cousin Charles Vice.
The worthy but dull solicitor in St. Lou.
Exactly, but does Mr. Vice really want a heavily mortgaged, dilapidated old house? We must speak to him, certainly, but the idea seems fantastic.
And everything else goes to Frederica Rice.
The bosom friend with her strange eyes and the air of a strayed Madonna. What is her concern in the business? She tells you that her friend is a liar. C'est gentil, ça. Why does she tell you that? Is she afraid of something that Nick might say? Did anyone tamper with the brakes of her car? And if so, who? And why should Mrs. Rice's admirer, Mr. Lazarus, the wealthy art dealer who is so knowledgeable about cars, support her accusation? And then there is Commander Challenger.
He's all right, I'm sure of that. A real pucker sob.
You have an extraordinary effect on me, Hastings.
Hmm?
You have so strongly the flare in the wrong direction that I am always tempted to go by it. Ah, well, I shall study the pucker, Commander Challenger. You have awakened my doubts.
My dear Poirot, a man who's knocked about the world as I have...
Never learns. But let us take ourselves off to Mott's garage. Perhaps there we shall learn the truth about the brakes on Mademoiselle Nick's car.
It wasn't difficult to lure the proprietor into a discussion about what had befallen the brakes. He launched off into a highly technical account of what the trouble was, all of which was entirely beyond me, and certainly beyond Poirot. However, one thing became inescapably clear. The brakes had certainly been tampered with, and this could have led to a very serious accident.
So that is that. The little Nick was right, and the rich Mr. Lazarus, who knows so much about cars, was wrong. Ah, Hastings, my friend, all this is very curious.
So what do we do now?
We visit the post office and send off a telegram.
A telegram?
Yes, a telegram.
Poirot wrote out his telegram without vouchsafing any information as to its contents. Feeling that he wanted me to ask him what they were, I carefully refrained from doing so. There was dancing that evening at the Majestic. Nick Buckley was bursting with vivacity, dressed in floating scarlet chiffon that dragged on the floor. Frederica Rice was in white and moved with a languorous, weary grace that was as far removed from Nick's animation as could be.
She's very beautiful.
Young Nick?
No, her friend. Is she evil? Is she good? Is she merely unhappy? Ah, she is a mystery. But on the other hand, she is perhaps nothing at all. But I tell you, my friend, she is an allumeuse.
What do you mean?
You will feel it sooner or later. Remember my words.
Very mysterious. Why don't you go and have a word with her yourself?
I am anxious to have a word with you, madame, while your friend is dancing.
Oh, really? What about?
I do not know whether she has told you. An attempt was made on her life this morning.
What do you mean?
Mademoiselle Buckley was shot at in the garden of the hotel.
Did Nick tell you this?
No, madame. I happened to see it with my own eyes. Here is the bullet.
But
that... It was no fantasy of mademoiselle's. I can vouch for that. And several other very curious accidents have happened in the last few days. Perhaps you have not heard. You only arrived here quite recently, did you not?
Yes. I had been staying with friends at Tavistock.
At Tavistock? I wonder, madame, what were the names of the friends with whom you were staying?
Is there any reason I should tell you that?
Oh, a thousand pardons, madame. I am most maladroit. But I myself have friends at Tavistock, and I thought that perhaps you might have met them there. Buchanan, that is their name.
Well, I can't remember anyone called that, but don't let's talk about boring people in Tavistock. I want to know about Nick. Who shot at her, and why?
I do not know, as yet, but I shall find out. You may not be aware of the fact, madame, but I am a detective. Hercule Poirot is my name.
A very famous name.
Madame is too kind.
And what do you want me to do, Monsieur Poirot?
To watch over your friend. That is all.
I shall certainly do that.
Thank you, madame. I need not waste your valuable time any longer. Au revoir.
I think you're rather showing your hand, Poirot.
What else can I do? It lacks subtlety, perhaps, but it makes for safety. At any rate, one thing emerges plain to see.
What's that?
The beautiful Frederica Rice was not at Tavistock. Where was she? Oh, see, the handsome Lazarus has returned. She's telling him. He looks over at us. He's clever, that one. Oh, if only I knew...
If only you knew what?
What I shall know on Monday. You have no longer the curiosity, my friend? There was a time.
There are pleasures that it's good for you to do without.
What are you talking about?
The pleasure of refusing to answer questions.
Ah, c'est malin.
Quite so.
But here comes Mademoiselle Nick.
You see, Mr. Poirot, I'm not letting myself be scared by it all.
Évidemment, mademoiselle.
Dancing on the edge of death.
It is a new sensation, mademoiselle.
Yes. Rather fun.
I wish she hadn't said that, dancing on the edge of death. I don't like it.
I know, it is too near the truth. Ah, she has courage, that little one. Unfortunately, it is not courage that is needed at this moment.
What is, then?
Caution, my friend. Caution.
The following day was Sunday. A beautiful, calm English Sunday. All I wanted was to sit on the terrace and let the morning gently drift by. But Poirot was most unusually energetic.
Come, my friend. We will try a little experiment. Monsieur Lazarus and Madame Frederica have gone for a ride in the car and taken Mademoiselle Nick with them. The coast is clear.
We went down the steps from the hotel and walked across to the headland and came to an inconspicuous little gate, rather rusty on its hinges.
End house private.
The French windows onto the veranda were open and we passed straight into the drawing room and up the stairs to Nick's bedroom.
You see how easy it is, Hastings. No one has observed us. We could do any little affair we had to do in perfect privacy, like cutting through the wire on this picture so that it would be bound to snap before a few hours had passed.
It looks very heavy, that picture. Nick had a lucky escape. There's someone in the house.
Did I not say how easy it was? I think we should find out who this someone is.
What the hell are you doing in here?
Ah, it is Mr. Croft, is it not?
Yes, that's right, but I...
Let us go down to the drawing room. We can talk more comfortably there.
So what's all this about, then? How do you know my name?
I will introduce myself. Hercule Poirot, at your service.
The detective chap? Oh, I've heard all about you.
In Australia?
Oh, yes, yes. We followed lots of your cases. But the local paper said you were here.
The local paper?
The St. Lou Herald. Oh, the famous French detective.
Belgian. But it makes no matter. This is my friend Captain Hastings.
Pleased to meet you.
Oh, how
do you... What were you doing in Nick's room? Were you looking for something?
Oh, it's just all very simple. The other night, a picture fell from over Mademoiselle Buckley's bed. She may have told you about it.
She certainly did. She was lucky not to have her skull cracked open.
I promised her that I would bring her a special chain, one that would not snap. And since she told us that she would be out this morning, I take the opportunity to do the necessary measurements.
So, that's all that is. If you're not too busy, Mr. Poirot, could you spare the time to come back to the lodge? Have a cup of tea. Australian fashion, huh? Meet the wife? She'd be tickled pink to meet you.
You are too kind, Monsieur Croft. We shall be delighted. You have all the measurements correctly, Hastings?
What? Oh, yes. Yes, of course.
Then follow me. The lodge is only just across the garden.
Have you been in England long, Mr. Croft?
We've always wanted to visit the old country. We took a trip to the continent. Paris, Rome, Florence, all that sort of stuff. But when we were in Italy, there was this train accident. My wife was pretty badly hurt. Spine injury.
Oh, what a sad misfortune.
And so we came here. Found this place. Just what we were looking for. Not too many cars about. No noisy gramophones. Ah, here we are. Cooey!
Cooey!
I brought someone really special for you, Mother.
I read all about that blue train case, Mr. Poirot. That poor Mrs. Kettering and the Heart of Fire. But didn't I read somewhere that you'd retired? Given up for good and all?
Ah, madame, you must not believe all you read in the newspapers.
So you still carry on the business?
If I find a case that interests me.
And you're sure you're not down here on business now, Mr. Poirot? Calling it a holiday may be all part of the game.
You mustn't ask Mr. Poirot embarrassing questions, Bert, or he won't come again.
Mr. Poirot and his friend were helping Miss Buckley get a new chain for that picture, Mother. The one that fell.
Yes, we were just measuring it up.
That poor little girl might have been killed. She's a live wire and no mistake. Not much liked in the neighbourhood, or so I've heard. Well, that's the way in these stuck-up English places. I don't wonder she doesn't spend much time down here. And that long-nosed cousin of hers has no more chance of persuading her to live down here than a woman does.
Don't gossip, Millie.
Aha. So the wind is in that quarter. Monsieur Charles Vyse is in love with our little friend.
Oh, he's silly about her. But Miss Buckley won't marry a country lawyer. She's a sweet girl. But I'm concerned about her. She's had what I call a haunted look lately. And that worries me. I've got my reasons for being interested in that girl, haven't I, Bert?
No need to go into that, Mother. Now, Mr. Poirot, I wonder if you'd be interested in seeing some snapshots of Australia.
It was half an hour before we finally escaped, but the Crofts were nice people, I thought. Typical Australians.
You did not think that they were perhaps a shade too typical? Calling out cooey and showing us all those photographs on which, as it happens, neither of them appeared? Were they not perhaps playing their parts a little too thoroughly?
What a suspicious old devil you are, Poirot.
You are right, mon ami. I am suspicious of everyone, of everything. But then, Hastings, This is a situation in which we can take nothing and no one at face value.
On Monday morning, we had just finished breakfast when Nick Buckley was shown up to Poirot's room. The circles under her eyes were darker than usual.
I've had a telegram from my cousin Maggie. She's arriving at 5:30 this afternoon. I hope that makes you happy, Mr. Poirot.
I am very relieved to hear it. Some of my fears at least can be laid to rest.
Oh, I wouldn't count on it. Maggie's got no kind of a brain. Good works is about all she's fit for. That and never seeing the point of jokes. Freddy Rice would be 10 times better at spotting hidden assassins. And Jim Lazarus would be better still. He has hidden depths, says Jim.
And what about Commander Challenger?
Oh, George, he'd never see anything till it was under his nose. But he'd let them have it if it came to a showdown.
Well, let us hope that it will not.
Oh, I don't know. It's all great fun, isn't it?
Is it, Mademoiselle?
No. No, it isn't. I'm afraid. It's beginning to get to me. I always thought I was quite a brave person.
Oh, but you've shown the most wonderful courage, Miss Buckley.
I spend the whole time wondering whether something else is going to happen. And if it does, how it will happen.
Yes, that is the worst part of it.
This morning, I came here by the road. I simply couldn't bring myself to walk through the garden. I feel as though my nerve had gone all of a sudden and that all this should be going on top of everything else.
What exactly do you mean by on top of everything else, Mademoiselle?
Oh, just what the newspapers call the strain of modern life, I suppose. Too many cocktails, too many cigarettes.
No, you are not being honest with me.
But I've told you every single smallest thing.
About the accidents, yes. But you have not told me everything that is in your heart, in your life.
Can anyone do that?
Perhaps, Mademoiselle, it is not your secret.
If you think I know something about somebody else or have my suspicions, you're wrong. It's having no suspicions that's driving me mad. I'm not a fool. I can see that if these accidents aren't accidents, they must have been engineered by somebody very close at hand.
And you have no idea whom that person might be?
Not in the very least. Do you know a queer wish I have always had? I want to produce a play at Endhouse. I've seen all sorts of plays performed there in my mind. And now it's as though a drama really were being staged there. Only I'm not producing it. I'm in it. I'm probably the person who dies in the first act.
Now, Mademoiselle, this will not do. This is hysteria.
Oh. Did Freddy tell you I was hysterical? You mustn't always believe what she says. There are times when she isn't quite herself.
Tell me, Mademoiselle, have you ever thought of putting Endhouse up for sale?
I've thought about it, but that's as far as I've ever got.
Would you consider selling it if you got a good offer?
No, I don't think I would. Not, I mean, unless it was such a ridiculously good one that it would be foolish to turn it down.
Quite so, I understand.
By the way, there are fireworks tonight, Regatta Week and all that. I'm having a little dinner party at 8:00. You can see the fireworks splendidly from the garden. Will you come?
Oh, we will be enchanted, will we not, Hastings?
Many thanks, Miss Buckley.
Till this evening, then. Nothing like a party for reviving the flagging spirits.
That morning we called on Charles Weiss, or rather at Messrs. Weiss, Trevanion and Bettesworth, in the main street of St. Lou. He was tall, pale and impassive, and beginning to go a little bald. Poirot had brought a document with him on which he said he needed Mr. Weiss's guidance. It was all settled in a matter of minutes.
I am very much obliged to you. For a foreigner, you understand, these legal matters can be very difficult.
Oh, I'm only too glad to have been of assistance. May I ask who recommended me to you?
Miss Buckley. Your cousin, is she not? I tried to see you on Saturday morning. When was it, Hastings?
At about 12:30.
But you were out, I think.
That is right. I left early on Saturday.
Mademoiselle, your cousin must find that large house very lonely. She lives there by herself, I understand.
That is so.
Tell me, Mr. Weiss, is there any chance of the property ever being on the market?
None at all, I should say.
You must understand, I do not ask idly. I myself am in search of such a property. The climate of Saint-Lô enchants me. It is true that the house itself is in very bad repair, but I gather there has been very little money to spend on it. You do not think it possible that Mademoiselle would consider an offer?
I'm certain that nothing would induce her to sell. My cousin is quite fanatically devoted to the place. It is, you understand, a family home. Selling it would be quite out of the question.
And what impression did this Charles Byers make on you, my friend?
A very negative one. The kind of man you'd never remember on meeting again.
Did you notice anything that struck you as curious in the course of his conversation with us?
Well, I certainly wouldn't have said that Miss Buckley was fanatically devoted to End House. She's fond of the place, but nothing more than that.
And did you notice anything else?
He wasn't in his office at 12:30 on Saturday morning.
The time that somebody took a shot at Mademoiselle Nick. So, we cannot clear Mr. Weiss of suspicion.
Nick Buckley had done her best to give End House something of a festive air for her dinner party. When we arrived, she was dancing by herself to the gramophone, wrapped in a highly exotic kimono covered with dragons.
Oh, it's only you. What a nuisance.
Oh, mademoiselle, we are desolated. Whom did you hope we might be?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to sound rude. I hoped you might be from the dressmakers. I've been waiting for my frock to arrive for hours. The brutes promised me faithfully it would be here by 6:30.
There is to be a dance tonight at the Majestic, is there not?
Yes, we're going there after the fireworks.
Oh, Nick, have they still not brought your dress? It's too bad.
I'm expecting it any minute.
Well, they're certainly taking their time.
This is my cousin Maggie. Maggie, these are the famous sleuths who are protecting me from the mysterious would-be assassin. Take them into the drawing room and let them tell you about it. Now, that really must be the dressmakers.
We were left alone with Maggie Buckley, and I formed a most favourable impression of her. A quiet girl, pretty in the old-fashioned manner. Her face was innocent of makeup, and she wore a simple, rather shabby black evening dress. She had frank blue eyes and a rather nervous smile.
Nick has been telling me the most amazing things. Someone took a pot shot at her with a gun in a hotel garden, and a boulder missed her by inches, and the brakes of her car have been tampered with. Surely she must be exaggerating. Whoever in the world would want to kill Nick?
Nevertheless, I assure you, mademoiselle, that it is the truth.
Well, if you think so, Mr. Poirot. I must say, Nick seems rather fey tonight. I can't tell what's the matter with her.
She's behaving with great courage, determined to carry on as usual.
It's the only way, isn't it? I mean, whatever one's feelings are, it's no good making a fuss about them. It only makes it uncomfortable for everyone else.
At about 7:30, Frederica Rice and Mr. Lazarus swept in. She was wearing a blue gown that made her look more like a Madonna than ever, although a very fragile one. Nick came dancing in to greet them.
What a simply wonderful shawl, Nick. Red, like old Chinese lacquer. Where on earth did you get it?
It's a family heirloom, Jimmy. Brought back by great-great-great-uncle Timothy from his travels in the East.
It's quite amazing. I've never seen anything like it.
Oh, it's warm, that's the main thing. I shall need it while we're watching the fireworks.
That black dress sets it off marvellously. I don't think I've ever seen you in black before. I thought you hated yourself in it. Is there any particular reason?
Oh, I don't know. Is there a reason for anything?
Where's George Challenger got to tonight? I thought you said he'd be here.
He had to go to Plymouth. I expect he'll arrive sometime or other. Maggie, I can't remember whether you've met Mr. Lazarus.
Mr. Lazarus?
We went into dinner. The food was indifferent, the champagne excellent, the conversation rather uneasy.
It doesn't look as if there's much hope for that poor chap who was trying to fly around the world.
Oh, you mean Michael Seaton?
Yes. If he'd succeeded, he'd have been the hero of the day. He's the kind of man England can't afford to lose.
Nick and I met him at the Touquet. She made quite a conquest. Didn't he take you up flying with him?
Yes, at Scarborough. Have you done any flying, Captain Hastings? Oh, there's the telephone. It's bound to be for me. Don't wait. It's getting late, and I've asked people around to see the fireworks.
I glanced at my watch. It was just 9:00. Dessert was brought in, and the port. Poirot and Lazarus talked about art. Frederica Rice gazed abstractedly out of the window, and I did my best to keep a conversation going with Maggie.
Well, I do so agree, but it's always like that, isn't it?
Come on out, all of you. It's nearly time for the fireworks, and the animals are coming in two by two.
We all trooped dutifully out into the garden. I suppose that Nick had invited around a dozen people, none of them very interesting. Charles Vice was there, and Mr. Croft from the lodge.
It's too bad that Mrs. Croft couldn't come. We ought to have carried her over on a chair or something.
It's bad luck on Mother altogether, but she never complains. She's got the sweetest nature in the world.
Oh,
good one.
I'm freezing. I'm going to run in and get my coat.
Oh, please, let me, Miss Buckley. Oh,
thanks all the same, but you wouldn't know where to find it.
Oh, Maggie, be a darling and get mine too.
I don't think she heard you. I'll get it. I need my fur wrap. The shawl isn't nearly warm enough. It's the wind.
That is all they can think of to say. In the end, it grows monotonous, do you not find? Oh. And the grass, it is damp to the feet. Oh, I shall suffer for this. I shall get a chill.
A chill? On a lovely night like this?
A lovely night? You say that because the rain does not pour down in sheets. But I tell you, my friend, if there were a little thermometer, you would see.
Must admit, I wouldn't mind putting a coat on.
You are very sensible.
Shall I bring yours?
Oh, it is the dampness of the feet, I fear. Would it be possible, do you think, to lay your hands on a pair of galoshes?
Not a hope. That kind of thing isn't done, Poirot.
Then I shall go back and sit in the house. Just for the fireworks, should I catch a fluxion de poitrine? Let us go in, my friend. We are all children at heart. Les feux d'artifice, the party, the conjurer.
Huh?
Mais qu'est-ce que vous avez?
There, Poirot. In front of the French window. Someone's lying huddled on the ground.
The scarlet Chinese shawl. Oh, mon Dieu, it has happened. In spite of everything, in spite of all my precautions, it has happened. And this time, the murderer has succeeded.
In part two of Agatha Christie's Peril at End House, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat and Captain Hastings by Simon Williams. Nick Buckley, Gemma Saunders, Frederica Rice, Susanna Hamilton, Mr. Croft, Terence Edmund, Mrs. Croft, Richenda Carey, Maggie Buckley, Elizabeth Conboy, Charles Vice, Stephen Critchlow, Jimmy Lazarus, Sean Arnold. Peril at End House is dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.